When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, hey. Really the only thing that gon' be normal is distribution. Normal folks gon' infuse some. Optimize your lineups and you feed the rest, you mute them. Turning it up, these numbers are loud. Peeping this game from a nimbus is wild. Making it rain while I embrace all this risk, I'm insane. Talking about that best bell, I'm the best, best, best tail. Into the next world, guess I got next still. Best bell, I'm the best, best, rest till into the next world, guess I got next still.
And welcome to the Best Bell Fantasy Football Podcast and live stream on the Player Profiler Network. I'm Bradley Stalder, your host for tonight, and we have a special guest joining us for the first time in the Best Bell Fantasy Podcast, Sam Sherman from Ship Chasing, Stat Chasing, ADP Chasing, dedicated to high stakes and best ball. Sam, I'm so honored that you're able to join me tonight. I guess it's tonight. We're recording this in the morning, but it's going to be posted in the afternoon, evening. Sam, I'm grateful for you to spend some time with me talking through some best ball here in June.
Yeah, and I've been doing this since February. Glad to be still talking best ball in June. I haven't got burnt out yet, but yeah, thanks Bradley for having me on. Excited to chop it up on some best ball stuff this afternoon or evening or whatever time it is.
Before we get into tonight's content, Sam is going to join me going through top risers and fallers over the past 2 weeks. Then we're going to talk about early roster construction and also some best ball dynasty league tips and tricks for being successful in those leagues, because this is hashtag dynasty week for player profilers. So we had to give an homage there. And then we're going to look at some best ball teams at the end. Before we get into all that content, and goodness, a word from Matt Kelly.
Let's take a moment to talk about Underdog Fantasy. Now, many of you have already signed up. Thousands have signed up from Player Profiler already over the years. Underdog has supported us since 2020. Much of what on Player Profiler is because of Underdog, because of their support. Get the Underdog app, plug in that promo code Underworld. I used to play Underdog just for the best ball drafts. Best ball drafts are amazing. These draft rooms fill so quickly, and you can win life-changing money. You want to take advantage of all the sleepers we talk about on this show? What better place than in an Underdog draft room to do that? And I recommend taking your Underdog play to the next level by diving into their NFL pick'ems. It's important to correlate those NFL pick'ems. You can pick both the quarterbacks and the wide receivers to exceed expectations. Correlate them, and you can 5x your payout. Bada bing, bada boom. Underdog Fantasy, the promo code is Underworld. For an instant deposit match up to $100, Underdog is the truest friend of the Underworld.
That's right. Make sure you use promo code Underworld when you're depositing for the first time. Sam, I'm here in Ohio. They have Underdog here. I live in Michigan. They don't have Underdog there. It's been great drafting some BBM for teams, and maybe I'll sneak in some puppies before I head back to Detroit. But we've seen some shifts in ADP over the last 2 weeks. Last week, I drafted a high stakes best ball on FFPC with Theo Greminger. But we're taking a look at these top risers. The first one is, I think, the most obvious, Sam, and that's Alexander Mattison jumping from the mid-80s, 82 overall, to 66th. That's the highest relative ADP growth that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. And at what point is it too expensive, or that there is some risk in drafting Alexander Mattison? What is the inflection point, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So the upside case for Mattison is pretty straightforward. You look at his six starts that he's had in replacing Dalvin Cook over the last couple of years, and he's averaged 18.4 half PPR fantasy points in those six starts. So that would make him, like, just look at last year, if he got to that 18.4 number, that would make him the running back three overall. So the upside case is pretty straightforward. You're just hoping, hey, they give him that same role they've always given him when they don't have Cook. He walks into a huge workload, scores some touchdowns, catches some passes, etc. I think the fear with Mattison is that if you look at some of the advanced rushing statistics, he doesn't particularly pop as a highly efficient rusher. So I think drafters will worry that one of his backups, and it's hard to say who that's going to be at this point, could be Dwayne McBride, could be Ty Chandler, could even be some free agent that's not on the team now, Leonard Fournette, Kareem Hunt, someone like that, could come in and take a bigger share of the work. And then you're left holding the Mattison bag when you have this not super efficient rusher who doesn't have as big of a workload as we're projecting him for right now. But back to your original question, I think Mattison at pick 65, where he's going now, is fine. And in a team where I drafted a bunch of wide receivers early, I can use all of his points when they hit my lineup. I'm fine taking Mattison at 65. I think that's a fair price. Now, once he gets ahead of guys like Dobbins, Aaron Jones, Mixon, Kenneth Walker, if he gets to the 50 range, I'll probably have very little of him because I prefer those other bets better. But I think at 65 is about a fair price for Mattison right now. We'll see if his rise continues. I bet it will.
I'll put a bow on the Mattison topic. Are you concerned at all? Because not from a usage standpoint, but in these large tournaments, you're also competing against other drafters who have taken Mattison in the 80s, in the 90s. Heck, I took him in round 11, like back in March or in some drafts. Like, mm-hmm. You're competing against other drafters who had taken him rounds and rounds earlier. How much of a concern is that for someone who's drafting a lot of teams in these large tournaments?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm trying to pull up quickly what Mattison's ADP was when the tournament opened. It looked like it was at 104 when Best Ball Mania opened. Obviously, right. In March, I think you could get him, like pre-draft, you could get him even cheaper. But yeah, there certainly will be some teams that have Mattison in the hundreds, in the 90s. I do think that's an important consideration. At pick 66, I'm not overly worried about that. So that's the difference between what a six-round pick and then pick 100 is like an eighth or ninth round pick.
Yeah.
I don't think that's enough of a rise where I'm overly worried about that dynamic. But that said, if you're playing a bunch of best ball drafts and you say, I only want to take Mattison in these sort of like snapshot drafts, like the puppies where when they're going to be released, no one's getting Mattison at pick 104. I get in like skewing your exposure to tournaments where you're not competing with those drafters that got Mattison at pick 100. I understand that angle.
Okay, I agree as well that there's certain places for you to do it and time frames. And you mentioned selecting the correct contest as well when we're getting into that. Let's move on to Rondale Moore, who's jumped 29 spots in the last 2 weeks. The DeAndre Hopkins wave is impacting Rondale Moore, and we've seen some nice games from him over the last couple of years. The problem with Rondale Moore is he's not stayed healthy. And you have to wonder whether he's going to be able to handle a full workload, what this offense is going to look like. There's a lot of questions that we have about Rondale Moore's role and how he's been impacted in the past. It makes sense that he's jumping up this high. I was actually surprised he was at 165 just 2 weeks ago. How are you, Rondale Moore, as we're moving on into the middle of June?
Yeah, Rondale Moore is an interesting one because he does not, like, you look at his body type, very small guy. He's rocked up. He's very strong, but a very, very short stature. He would not really profile as a guy we would expect to play a lot on the outside in two wide receiver sets. And that's something I care about a lot in best ball. I want guys who are playing consistently in two wide receiver sets because, especially in underdog half PPR, you want guys that are going to be on the field when the team gets into the red zone. And oftentimes those are two wide receiver sets, even like jumbo one wide receiver set sometimes, right? So I get concerned from a touchdown standpoint with a guy like Moore. That said, last year he played when either Hopkins or Marquise Brown was out last year, he played in like 77% of those two wide receiver sets. And I think that number maybe is even a bit higher because he left some game early with an injury or something. So they did put him into that role a lot last year. And he was solid, if not super exciting with it. He averaged 20% targets per route run, which is pretty good. Yards per route run of around 1.5. He had some decent spike weeks in there. So I think at 136, I'm still fine with Rondale Moore. But I do think there's a concern that the Arizona offense is just not that exciting. Michael Wilson, who they draft from the third round and is a bigger body wide receiver, takes some of those reps in two wide receiver sets by the end of the year. I think there's certainly some concerns with Rondale, but yeah, not to give the boring take again, but I think it's a fairly priced pick at 135. I'm not planning to go super overexposed or super underexposed to Rondale at that price. I think if you jump to 110, 115, I'm probably starting to take my foot off the pedal with Rondale and choosing other players.
Yeah, you mentioned his size, his player profiler icon, because on player profiler, instead of, sometimes there are special icons, and his is the Ant-Man, which is phenomenal. But it was surprising. I agree with you. It was surprising that Rondale Moore did play that much on the outside, but there's a new coaching staff. We wonder how he's going to be utilized there. And another consideration is Greg Dortch, because he played well out of the slot in Rondale Moore's absence last year. So I actually like Greg Dortch really late. Not because of the Arizona offense, but because of what production he had put up previously with absent wide receivers. If you're out on Rondale Moore, maybe you're more in on Greg Dortch later.
Yeah, and Michael Wilson is one I reference as well. And I think in terms of, I'm fine. Yeah, Dortch is an 18th round pick. That makes sense to me in the right situation. Michael Wilson, I also, as an 18th round pick, again, you look at this wide receiver room, Greg Dortch, Rondale Moore, Marquise Brown, it's these like tiny dudes. And there's a chance Michael Wilson, much bigger body player, didn't have great college production, but they might just want that different archetype on the field. And so, yeah, at end of the year, I can see Kyler's back. Michael Wilson, they're testing him out in a lost season. He gets more playing time. I could see him being an okay 18th round stab if I'm trying to correlate it with the Philadelphia offense, or I have Kyler Murray on my team. I think he's an okay pick at the end of drafts as well.
We'll finish the top risers with Tyquan Thornton, and his big rise is due to a lot of camp hype. That we've heard a lot of positive reports about Thornton. We know that Jacoby Myers has moved on. He played, yes, a lot in the slot, but also a lot out wide. The New England Patriots replaced Jacoby Myers with Juju Smith-Schuster, who operates pretty significantly out of the slot. So I wonder if that opens up a little bit more for Tyquan Thornton. He should beat Devontae Parker, but this is a 4.28 speed guy, second round draft capital. Thornton had a spike week last year, and I wonder if this is a nice later round spike week candidate yet again. We hope that the New England Patriots offense takes a step forward under Bill O'Brien, but how are you approaching this rise? Do you expect Thornton to continue to rise as we get further in the offseason and his role is more clear?
Yeah, Thornton is an interesting one. It's funny, you mentioned that spike week in the playoffs. I had a team in the Best Ball Mania Finals last year with Thornton. And that spike week in week 17 was almost even bigger. He almost caught a second touchdown in that game, which I don't want to do the math, but probably cost me some money there, Tyquan. Anyways, he's interesting. You look at his speed, his athletic profile, it's very sexy. But then his actual production last year, you compare it to other wide receivers in New England, and he was really the least efficient wide receiver in New England running routes. He had just 0.76 yards per route run last year, just 13% targets per route run. Guys like Devontae Parker was at 1.7 yards per route run. Kendrick Bourne, 1.5. Even Nelson Agholor, 1.2. So it's tough to look at his numbers from last year and be too optimistic. But wide receivers get better all the time. And I do understand the angle of betting on a year two wide receiver to break out a little bit more. The coaching staff is hopefully going to be more confident this year in New England. I do think that I love Thornton when he was at like 180, like two, even 200 earlier in the year. I think at 162, I'm going to have a slight fade on Thornton. I like Marvin Mims in that range quite a lot. I like Jaden Reed quite a lot. Even MVS goes around there, and I like his chances of just running a bunch of routes in Kansas City. It's not the worst pick. I don't blame anyone for he's the wide receiver 73. It's not like he's expensive, but I think there are other targets at this point that I like better, just knowing that Thornton's rookie year wasn't overly promising.
Yeah, we had some like one green flag and a couple red flags for Thornton as we're viewing him. And I agree with you. There are second round wide receivers from this past year's draft where they don't have as many of those flags, and maybe we're taking a chance on a Denver Broncos offense that'll be rejuvenated, and Mims may be beating out Tim Patrick by the end of the year. We'll be getting maybe some spike weeks there. Maybe Jaden Reed is taking a step forward. I agree with you. There's more pathways to possibility, but we're still tantalized by Thornton just taking one to the house and breaking one big play, and that's within his range of outcomes.
For sure. Yeah, that's my logic. You bring up Mims and even Jaden Reed. It's like you're betting on sort of the young second round pick. I'd rather just do it with the rookies who we haven't seen yet and might be really good versus a guy in Thornton who showed last year that he wasn't that good. Now I'm not completely writing him off, obviously, like players can get better. But I like those Reed and Mims bets just a little better knowing how Thornton's rookie year went. But yeah, you're right. Like the speed on Thornton is he's a unicorn in that sense. There's not many guys out there with 4.28 speed. He catches a couple deep balls and you've justified the pick. So I get it. I don't think it's obviously not a terrible pick in that range.
We'll shift gears here to the furthest fallers over the last 2 weeks. And the top two are first round running backs relative to their previous ADPs. We've got Bijan Robinson and Christian McCaffrey. Maybe we can take a macro view at why are these running backs in the first round and even some in the second round falling more precipitously than at this point in the offseason. It's June 13th. Is this just regression back to where Bijan was supposed to be in particular, because he was getting steamed up pretty high, the 7th overall running back 2 just a couple weeks ago, and now he's dropped almost 2 spots, which is significant in the first round.
Yeah, the running back falling is certainly interesting, because there don't seem to be any news items that are causing these guys to fall, right? Like the risers we talked about, there's obvious reasons why they're falling. Why they're rising. These fallers, I think the element here that's causing them to fall, and it's not just these two guys. On my show, ADP Chasing, on Ship Chasing yesterday, we talked about how a lot of these early running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, all of them are slipping a couple spots right now. I think it's this dynamic of people being scared of being boxed out at wide receiver because of how heavy the wide receiver rooms are on Underdog, that they say, hey, like, first round, I'm choosing between Christian McCaffrey and Cooper Kupp. Why don't I just do Cooper Kupp, and then in the second and third round, I can get Derrick Henry and Josh Jacobs as my running backs. Whereas if I go Christian McCaffrey, the wide receivers I'm looking at in that range are like DK Metcalf, T. Higgins, Calvin Ridley. So I think people are maybe just doing that analysis of saying McCaffrey's a stud, but I can still get running backs later that have a chance of maybe being the running back one overall, or at least like top three running backs. Whereas if I take McCaffrey, the wide receivers tier drop in that round is a lot bigger in that range where I'll be making my next pick. So I think that's the reason why these guys are falling, if I were to guess. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm taking McCaffrey at pick 4, and I'm not thinking too hard about it. Like, he's, I don't know. I think we tend to overthink these things a lot. Christian McCaffrey, when he's firing, is the best asset in fantasy football, and doesn't matter how you split it. Like San Francisco last year, he was still awesome. Maybe he wasn't getting those like crazy 95% snap shares anymore, but he's still scoring a shit ton of touchdowns. He's still getting all the high value touches. Like he's still a good pick. Yeah. Curious what your thoughts are on these fallers. Do you have a better idea than me of why they're falling?
The drumbeat for wide receiver is certainly there. And I think that more people who are coming out and saying you need to be getting wide receiver earlier, that's going to influence the public. The drafters are going to be going in. You mentioned that. I think that there's also still concern about where can these veteran running backs land? And maybe that's like in the back, maybe that's the back burner. Maybe that's the 1 or 2% shifts, but Dalvin Cook could land somewhere and disrupt an entire backfield. You could have Leonard Fournette land somewhere. And even though we think that he's past his prime, he's still going to disrupt some running back room. Same with Ezekiel Elliott, same with Kareem Hunt. I think that those players are undervalued right now. And I wonder if that might be lurking in the back of people's minds of these veteran running backs that are still hanging out. Could they end up in a place that could be frustrating for fantasy?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And both these guys, Bijan and McCaffrey, like, They're not going to have extreme workhorse roles, I think. And I think the era of the extreme workhorse running back is like almost it's super rare. Like we saw McCaffrey a couple years ago in Carolina. We saw Najee Harris's rookie year. Maybe even James Conner last year had some stretches where he was doing it. But I think it's smart for these teams. There's talented running backs behind them in Tyler Algier and Elijah Mitchell. I think those guys will have small roles. Am I like worried about that? No, I just think that's the new NFL. Every running back has somebody behind them that's going to get some kind of role. But maybe I don't have a concern with these guys' backups, but I think maybe that's creeping into some people's heads that when the 49ers are blowing out the Cardinals, then they're going to put in Elijah Mitchell in the second half to do all the dirty work or something like that. Maybe that's in the back of people's heads as well. Yeah.
And we'll shift then to Justin Fields, but I think also from a macro view, quarterbacks have been falling for the last month, Sam. Like this is not just Fields. It's not just Josh Allen. It's nearly every single quarterback is falling week after week. In fact, I'm looking at the ADPs over the last few weeks. Derek Carr is 0.07%, like almost no change at all. Mac Jones, no change, but like Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Trey Lance, Joe Burrow, all dropping like 4 or 5%. Jalen Hurts dropping 14%. These are players who are very good for fantasy, or many of them are drafted early. Is this, now that we are closer to the season, we have more secure assets in wide receiver and running back, and since we know that quarterback will produce, maybe as we get research in on these players, like the flex plays, the tight ends, wide receivers, running backs, whoever are going earlier in those rounds 1 through 4, are we taking for granted how good these quarterbacks are? And maybe that's why they're falling a little bit, because we are becoming truthers now of players starting in June.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and you mentioned it's not just Fields, it's everybody on our ADP chasing show. Yesterday, like our top 10 fallers, it was like Fields, Hurts, Mahomes, like all the elite quarterbacks, I think besides Lamar Jackson, were on our top 10 fallers list. Yeah, echoing that point. And yeah, I did think that, so if we zoom in on the elite quarterbacks, which I'll narrow in on those like guys who are going in the second round now, and Hurts, Mahomes, and Allen, I do think they were maybe slightly overpriced in the mid-second round. But then once you get to the mid-third round and those elite potential workhorse running backs are gone, like I view sort of Ramondre, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, pick and choose which guys you like, but I view those guys as having elite running back one upside. Once those guys are gone, I think it totally makes sense to take your Jalen Hurts, take your Patrick Mahomes, take your Josh Allens. Unless they get injured, they're just such surefire bets to produce a ton of fantasy points, and we know that their ceiling potential. So even if they don't separate as much as they did last year, and I think there's an argument for that, that they might not separate to the extreme they did last year, I still think they're like very safe bets. And especially with Mahomes and Allen, you can pick on their you can add on their pass catchers pretty late. There's a lot of options on both those teams to tack on your Rashee Rice, your Dawson Knox, your Dalton Kincaid, your Marquez Valdes-Scantling, et cetera. And you can get a pretty high ceiling stack with those guys. Yeah, I like those quarterbacks if they do go in the mid third. I think that's kind of where they're trending to go. And then Fields I like too. I think, man, Fields at the end of the fourth, they added a ton of weapons around him. Claypool, DJ Moore, obviously, even like tertiary pieces. They got Robert Tonyan as a pass catching tight end. I think he's
my boy
than...
Robert Tonyan. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the first, probably the first time anyone's going to tout Robert Tonyan on a podcast all summer, but they upgraded the stars and the tertiary pieces on that offense. Yes. I like Fields there quite a bit. He obviously has that elite rushing. And if he can just be a bit better as a passer in year two, I think he's totally justifiable at the end of the fourth round.
Yeah. Justin Fields at two of the top four quarterback scoring weeks last season, and he can access the just not just week winning weeks, but separators, differentiators between you and the next team in your league. Plus, Justin Fields is one of those players that can score so many points that you can afford to miss on other players. Like, he can cover up some of the mistakes that you make, and so for a player like that to continue to fall, like, maybe. How long do you think this fall is going to last for quarterbacks? Because it's been pretty consistent over this past month. Is it going to get to July or August, and then we're going to finally see the quarterbacks slow down? Or is it going to be all the way until September? I don't think so, but it's just been so consistent over the last month. Where is the line of demarcation, do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had the answer to it. I think how I try to think about it is, what are sort of like, particularly we're talking best ball, these are people who are really focused on stacking. Think of like the equilibrium of where these guys will settle with their pass catchers. I think one of the reasons Fields was falling a lot, right, is because there was a period where Fields and Moore were going at like the 3-4 turn, and then people started fading DJ Moore. They're saying, you can't take him in the fourth round. Moore started sliding back, and as a result of that, Fields followed him back. Now they're going very tightly at the 4-5 turn, and I think that's more of like a stable equilibrium of their price, in a sense that I think Moore has sort of reached near the end of his fall, and as a result, people who like to stack their pass catchers are going to pair Fields and Moore pretty tightly there at the 4-5 turn. So my guess with Fields is that's what this fall is just like correcting his price to that 4-5 turn instead of the 3-4 turn. And I think similarly with the elite quarterbacks, they have floors in terms of how far they can fall. In my mind, like, I don't think the Kelsey drafter is going to pass on Mahomes in the mid third, like consistently, like that seems like that won't happen. I don't think similarly, the Josh Allen drafter is going to pass on Diggs in the late third. I don't think the Jalen Hurts drafter, sorry, the AJ Brown drafter is going to pass on Jalen Hurts in the late third. So I think thinking about like the pass catchers and the stacking and how far the players can fall, like relative to that, I think is the best way to think about it. So yeah, zooming back out, I think the answer to your question, I think this is a bit of a temporary fall, and I bet it really slows down the next couple of weeks and they stabilize where they are. That's my best guess looking at like the pass catchers and the stacking on these offenses.
Look, I'll continue to take the quarterback falling. Let me tell you, Sam, Theo Greminger and I drafted Jalen Hurts at the 309 in an FFPC best ball draft just a couple days ago. And we felt that was a gift, sniping. Well, we drafted him naked, but we sniped the AJ Brown and Devonta Smith drafter. So
yeah, I'm doing that too. Like Jalen Hurts falls to me, even if I don't have his pass catcher in the late third, especially in half, I think in FFPC totally justifiable too, but especially in half PPR, like I feel like people don't factor in that the quarterback scoring in half PPR is way more powerful because So I'd recommend people check out Hayden Wink's research on this. He has some numbers that show these elite quarterbacks are adding so many points above replacement to your team, even when you compare them to the elite skill players. So yeah, late third, I will be taking these quarterbacks. I think maybe last year I wouldn't have had that perspective, but looking at it a bit more this year, I'm pretty sold on the late third being a valuable place to take these elite quarterbacks.
Awesome. Let's pivot here. We spent a good amount of time diving into these farthest fallers and highest risers. Now, Sam, we're going to get into some lessons. So typically what I'll do in this podcast is I will give a best ball lesson or some pro tip or some way in which either a new drafter or a veteran drafter might be able to improve their practice as a best ball drafter. So sometimes I'll lean into some of the research that Hayden has done or TJ Hernandez has done, or some things that you find, I find very interesting on Twitter, and I want to share those best practices. And today, Sam, we're going to dive into some roster construction questions, especially looking at the beginning of the drafts. So we're talking rounds 1 through 4. Maybe we'll sneak into round 5 possibly, but let's start with question 1, because throughout the first 4 rounds, every single player in those first 4 rounds has 100% of the time he's drafted 100% of the time.
Yep.
There are no leagues where someone who's drafted in the first 4 rounds is getting undrafted. It's impossible. Now, when we get into like rounds 13, 14, 15, we start to see that trickle a little bit. But that means that we also are competing against other teams that also have all of these players. So how can we have unique starts to begin our draft? And how important is it to have a unique start when these are the same players being drafted, I don't know, from 700, 600,000 teams?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's not like DFS where players are truly under-owned, especially when you're talking these first 4 rounds. Every player is going to be owned 100% of the time in all drafts. That's a good way to anchor the conversation. I think for me, think about first, when does uniqueness matter? It does, obviously, it does not matter in the regular season of your best ball tournament. So in weeks 1 through 14, when you're just trying to advance your team into the playoffs, right? The fact that you have unique combos there, it doesn't matter, right? Like at that moment. When it does matter is once you get into the playoffs. I think the idea is you want to sneak a team into the finals that has a unique combination of players. So maybe this example, like say everyone's drafting CeeDee Lamb and Amon-Ra St. Brown together because they're correlated in week 17. Say you want to pivot off that and you take Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tony Pollard, CeeDee Lamb's teammate. And now you get to the finals and all the other Amon-Ra teams have CeeDee Lamb and you have Tony Pollard. And that kind of gives you leverage in the finals if Pollard has a big week, right? So that's the idea of when it matters, when you get to the finals. For me, I think it's important theoretically, but it's not one of the top things I'm thinking about. And that's for a couple of reasons. Like one, the playoff, once you get to the finals, the ownership percentages of players are going to be so skewed by what happens in weeks 15 and 16 that it's almost like uncontrollable, right? You could get to week 17 and going back to that Amon-Ra CD combination, it could be that Amon-Ra and Tony Pollard both smash in weeks 15 and 16, and you get to the finals, and just because of that selection bias, actually the teams that started with Amon-Ra and Tony Pollard are like over representative relative to the CD teams, right? Even if at the start of the year the ownership percentages, there were higher, there were more CD Lamb Amon-Ra combos. It's a nuanced point, but like the final playoff weeks are so hectic and so chaotic that we don't actually know when we get to week 17 which combinations are going to be over and under owned. So because of that, I'm not like overly concerned with it as like the top thing I'm thinking about. But I do think that particularly we get to the end of the draft season and say like we have data that kind of shows that nobody is taking Derrick Henry and whatever Cooper Kupp together. I don't think that's true, but say we have data on that. I will try to like maybe do some reaching in rounds 2 to like make that happen if I had good data on what combinations are more or less likely, but it's not one of the top 3 or 4 things I'm probably thinking about in the early rounds. But yeah, open to be proven wrong about this, but that's my like initial take.
And it sounds like we should be more concerned about this as we get data close to the start of the launch of week one.
Yeah.
We've seen, and make sure you guys are following Sam on Twitter at Sherman_FFB, because Sam, you post a lot of great stuff and you also interact with a lot of great content as well with regard to, we saw some sample size controversy that erupted. We won't dive into that rabbit hole, but ultimately, like, you don't need every single league to be submitted for you to get a strong sample of the trends of what people are doing, but you do have a good sense of, all right, these combinations are probably going to be this is a good projection or a good range for us to have an estimate as we get closer in. Yeah. And I wonder
also, sorry, on that point quickly, I'd also recommend people check out Chad Mashkey on Twitter. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Chad, but I've reposted some of his work, but he's doing cool stuff like collecting real best ball drafts and has some data that anybody has access to. So just wanted to get that plug in, but sorry to cut you off, Bradley.
Awesome. It's all good. It's all good, yeah. Sam. Let's keep her moving. And question number two is, how can best ball drafters stay unique if they have these similar starts? And I'll preface it by the most obvious answer are like late round stacks and correlations, but are there other ways in which we can see staying unique if you have a similar start? Is it structurally? Is it with teams? Is it like using that data that might give projected rostership or projected combinations? What are some things that you're considering?
Yeah, that you highlighted a couple of good things there. Yeah, I'd say one, rounds, like you mentioned, last two picks, maybe last three picks, round 16 through 18, particularly when we get closer to the end of the year and we know which players have made the team, just take running back twos or maybe wide receiver threes or fours that aren't getting drafted, but we know they're on rosters. Like a good example of this last year, and it didn't fully pay off, but paid off would be like Deion Jackson. No one was drafting Deion Jackson, but on the depth chart, late August, he was listed as the number two or three running back on the team. I think Nyheim Hines was there, but it was clear, okay, if Taylor goes down, is Nyheim Hines going to become the workhorse back? Probably not. So that was a valuable like handcuff contingency play to make that nobody else was making. And I think even Deion Jackson, he wasn't in the playoffs, so people don't talk about it, but he had a pretty huge spike week, one of those weeks that Taylor went out. So that's a good one, targeting those players. I think another one is, and this gets missed sometimes, but we talk about getting ADP value. Taking ADP value actually opens you up to unique roster constructions, particularly in the early rounds. If I'm in round four and Amari Cooper has slid all the way to the end of the fourth round, if I take him there, there's not that many teams that are going to have gotten like Josh Jacobs or whoever you want in the third round plus Amari Cooper in the fourth paired with Justin Jefferson, right? Like just taking that sliding ADP value opens you up to unique constructions. And then the last thing I'd call out, which I've been thinking about, and I actually want to do research on this. This is more of a gut feel than something I have like data on supporting, but I think like mega stacking offenses can be unique from the perspective of sneaking a high upside player into the finals. Say I take, and I think a lot of people would say you shouldn't do this, but say you take Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle, and you stack them with Brock Purdy or something, or Trey Lance if you want to do that. People might say that's overstacking. All those guys can't hit their upside in the same week. You're basically wasting a roster spot. I'd say if San Francisco's offense is firing, those guys are likely going to be rotating spike weeks throughout the season. And maybe weeks 15 and 16, Kittle smash and Ayuk smash and Debo does kind of nothing. And I sneak that unique Debo team into the finals because I'm just saying I'm betting on San Francisco's offense being really good and all these players producing spike weeks. And I'm actually okay with like overstacking it, knowing that they're not all going to hit my lineup in the same week. But if two of them can hit the lineup in the same week, that's okay to burn like three or four roster spots when you're getting two countable scores or whatever in your lineup. So that's another thing. I think this, the like overstacking, I like it better when it's cheaper, say the Giants pass catchers or the Panthers pass catchers or something like that. But I think actually the overstacking stuff, I think people shy away from too much. And I think it actually could help you get unique in the finals.
We'll take a look at a team later on that is, as you described, overstacked. So I'm excited for you to take a peek at it. We'll go to question three. How is starting location on the draft board influencing who you're selecting at the start of your draft? I hope that's a clear question.
Yeah. No, it's definitely clear. Yeah, for me in the first round this year, I am not like saying I know better too much. I'm just taking the guys at ADP. I think they're all like relatively fairly priced. Yeah, won't go into my player takes, but I am just like following the draft board most of the time early on in drafts. So that's really changing what I do, because oftentimes I'll get a wide receiver because right now like 5 or 6 of the first 7 picks are wide receivers. I'm often taking a wide receiver in the first round when I'm going early in drafts, and then loading up on running backs in round 2 and 3. And alternatively, near the end of the draft, I often find myself staring at like Bijan or Austin Eckler. And then in that case, I don't really want to go running back, running back, running back. So I'm starting with a running back and then at least mixing in 1 or 2 other wide receivers in rounds 2 or 3. Yeah. And maybe the uniqueness, people would say that that's dumb and I should be thinking more consciously about flipping the draft board on its head and stuff like that. But I particularly in round 1, I think once you get to round 2 or 3, I start and like my player takes start to have more influence. There's more players I like and don't like, but I'm just taking the best player, what I think is the best player available, regardless of position, in the first 3 rounds. And then I'm figuring out my roster construction from there. I'm even like running back, running back, running back. I'm not doing that a ton, but if that's what the room gives me, I'm not like scared about getting buried at wide receiver. Maybe if you're drafting in like one of Peter Overzet's like crazy stream rooms where Rondale Moore goes in round 5 or something, then I'd be scared. But in normal rooms, like, I can recover, I think, at wide receiver in rounds 4 through 7, just hammer them. So I'm not too worried about the roster construction stuff in the first three rounds. I'm just, which player do I think has the highest weekly ceiling, projects best throughout the whole year? That's who I'm targeting, regardless of position.
Yeah, in the draft last night, Austin Eckler fell to the 1-2 turn. I felt like that was a good value for him. But it's those types of things where maybe one way that you're unique is you just let the board come to you. You're taking the best player available, sure. But as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, ADP discrepancies is a real way to make yourself unique. And maybe the ADP really doesn't shift very much versus at the first couple rounds. But once you get into the round 3, round 4, the larger the gap, like that's going to make a significant shift. And you mentioned Hayden's work earlier. Hayden put out some great research on the uniqueness of, if you have a player drafted in rounds 4 to 14, that's like better than, you're drafting them better than about 90% of the rest of the tournament if you're 12 spots or further from ADP. So you mentioned a lot of good things there for consideration as you're drafting at the beginning there, Sam.
Yeah. And one other piece of research I'll highlight, which I think is really interesting. This is from Neil Farley on Twitter's Feel Gnarly. And he was on Pete Overzet's stream yesterday, and he showed this data that was advance rate by how many times you just take the player that's at top of the positional ADP. So not even overall ADP, but it's say like you're going to draft a quarterback and it's Justin Fields versus Justin Herbert, and you're just always clicking the guy who's at the top by ADP. Those teams that do that more often increase their advance rate pretty considerably. I wish I had the figure to show here, but I would definitely recommend checking out his work on Twitter and his stream with Pete that just showed, sometimes just giving into the market and saying, you know what, the market's probably smarter than me as an individual. I believe there are some people that their takes can beat the market for sure, but I think if you're not someone who's so deep into the fantasy weeds that you feel like you have your own player takes, just draft smart based on construction and take the player at the top of ADP, and you can meaningfully increase your advance rate and also your uniqueness, right? Like we talked about, you grab a player who's falling 2 rounds past ADP, that's going to be unique. So you can have your cake and eat it too a lot of times.
I love it. Eat all of the cake. Take that away. All right, real quick, we won't dive into very deep player takes for these, but these 3 wide receivers, Devonta Smith, T. Higgins, Jalen Waddle, are all going pretty tightly bunched in the second round, maybe one or two of them will trickle into the beginning of the third round. I haven't seen Jalen Waddle go round three very often, but how are we going to approach these wide receivers? Are we already considering stacking with these offenses? Because we're talking Philly, we're talking Cincy, we're talking Miami. Is this something that you are, as you're drafting, I'm intentionally going to go into this draft, I'm getting Devonta Smith, I want to tie myself to Philly. I'm drafting T. Higgins knowing that I'm going to tie myself to Cincy, or the comeback arounds to Kansas City. Jalen Waddle, yep. I'm tying myself to Miami, maybe a comeback around to Baltimore. Like, how are we like approaching, how should we approach these three wide receivers given that they're so tightly bunched, but they're tied to good offenses?
Yeah, it's this pocket of wide receivers is super interesting because we really haven't seen, going back in years of fantasy, of team wide receiver twos going in the second round, at least like three of them going the second round in 1 year. That's pretty extreme. And I get it. Like, they're all on great offenses. They're all good talents. I do have like a soft fade on these players because I think targeting, like, I don't really see many scenarios where T. Higgins is the wide receiver one in fantasy and I have to pick him over someone like Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, even Tony Pollard, whatever, who I think could be RB1, RB2, RB3 in fantasy. So I like the ceiling cases for the running backs in that range better than the wide receivers for sure. But I still think they're not bad picks. You can certainly build winning rosters around them. I'd probably rank it as Devonta and Waddle are kind of like in the same tier for me. I think the odds of one of those guys becoming the wide receiver one on their team is at least possible. I don't think it's likely, but they've been in the league for slightly less time. The wide receivers, particularly for Jalen Waddle, like Tyreek Hill, is getting older. You can make that argument. Devonta has shown improvement from year one to year two, even with the addition of AJ Brown. So I get that argument. T. Higgins, for me, I would put the probability of him surpassing Ja'Marr Chase without an injury at near 0%. Whereas I think for Devonta and Jalen Waddle, I'd put it in the range of 20-ish%. So for me, that's how I'd rank it, just based on that. And like you said, I'm thinking about week 17 correlation. I'm thinking about stacking with these guys. I think if you get the Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith stack round two, round three, that's super exciting. The Waddle one, I maybe would slightly give the edge to Waddle over Smith just because the price of the quarterback. And when I'm thinking about stacking correlation, I think it's more valuable for stacking correlation the cheaper the price is. You're stacking in rounds one, two, and three, like going, I don't know, AJ Brown, Devonta, and Jalen Hurts altogether. Sure, like, I don't think that's terrible. If all those players hit, it's still your first three picks in the draft, and then you got to get a bunch of other things right in your later picks. Whereas if you stack up a later round quarterback in Jalen Waddle, like Tua and Waddle, you have that extra ammo in rounds one and three for skill position players, etc. So I do slightly lean Waddle there just because I think that the stack comes at a slightly better price, if that makes sense. But yeah, that's how I'm thinking about these guys.
This is also the Matthew Stafford corollary, like Cooper Kupp and then Stafford at quarterback 22-23. I think that's a very interesting consideration given that Kupp fell. Billy Muzio was in the FSGA draft last night and Cooper Kupp fell to 14th overall in a 14 team draft. Yeah, it's wild. So the public is sometimes out on Cooper Kupp, and if he's falling like that, and also the late Matt Stafford, like that's the corollary. So take these later stacks. I think that's one of the things. I also agree with you that I would rank them Waddle, Smith, T. Higgins, because I think that if Tyreek Hill misses time, Jalen Waddle has pathway to wide receiver one overall. Whereas if AJ Brown misses time, I don't know if that's true for Devonta Smith. I don't know if that's true for T. Higgins if Ja'Marr Chase misses, but maybe that'll lead into our next question. How important is viewing contingent upside for players, like through that lens, as we look at these players, just like the ones we looked at on the previous slide, or maybe there are other players you want to look through in the contingent upside lens?
Yeah, I think super, super valuable to think about contingent upside, particularly. I think traditionally people think about it more in the later rounds when you're selecting your backup running backs, maybe your your wide receiver threes on teams. I think it's really valuable to think about, you know, if the starter goes down on the team, does the player see a meaningful boost in production? Because in these prices is often like what's mostly baked into the prices is the player's like projection and median projection. For instance, I think you can make the argument with someone like Devonta Smith is that the upside case of AJ Brown going down and him becoming a massive target earner is not fully baked into his price. And as a result, like you could view him as a target in that range. That's not really, I think he's already priced like close to his ceiling anyway. So I wouldn't make that argument for him, but I think, yeah, a valuable like range to think about it for me is I really think about it with these backup running backs. Like maybe James Cook is an example of a guy where he's projected to be in a committee with Damian Harris, maybe even Latavius Murray and Josh Allen's on the team, obviously. I view him like I think he's really good at what he's good at. He's a smaller back, good receiver, get him out in space. He can be really explosive. His efficiency metrics look really good. But if Harris were to get injured, if Latavius Murray were to get injured and the backfield cleared for him, does he really project as a guy that's going to get the goal line work in Buffalo? I'm skeptical of that. And you can disagree with the individual player takes, etc. But like thinking about the player archetype and like sometimes with these passing down backs, I'm pretty skeptical that some of these guys are really due for huge role increases if the starter goes down or if the team will just find another bruiser to come in and replace them. Yeah, I think it's an important thing to consider, and I think about it more later in drafts.
It's the Nyheim Hines Deion Jackson corollary, right? It's
yeah.
We know that he's the passing down back, and in fact, Nyheim Hines gets traded. That's the wheels up scenario for Deion Jackson. Not only did he finish as the running back one overall, he did so because he caught what 9 or 10 passes in that game. So he took on both Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines roles. The contingent upside lens is an important one to consider as we're continuing to draft and monitoring these
depth charts.
Two final questions. How should Underdog BBM4 drafters treat the regular season prize pool? So this is something that's relatively new. In BBM3, only the number one winner from the regular season highest score won some money. Now it's increased. There are going to be multiple winners. It's now $500,000 instead of $1 million. But how the zeitgeist of regular season prizes, how much should that be in the mind of a drafter? Or should this just be something, I know you mentioned maybe this is something we should only consider like closer to the start of the season. Is there a certain timeline? Like how are we supposed to approach this shift in prize pool?
Yeah. I think it's something for me that on the margins, it's slightly changing how I approach things because when the money used to be only in the playoffs, I think you could justify more like drafting to take a hit to your advance rate if it felt like it gave you more playoff upside. And I still think you can do that, but I'm probably doing that less. I'm less interested in suspended players like Jameson Williams. I'm less interested in players who we know are going to be injured to start the year, Kyler Murray and Monte Williams, for example. I think like those players aren't undraftable, but I do think if you 30-ish percent, I think of the money now goes to the regular season. I want to build teams that have a chance of getting that regular season prize money. I'm not like designing my teams for it, but like I want the majority of my teams to be in the running for it because still obviously the huge prizes are in the playoffs. But let's be realistic. Two people are going to become millionaires off those final playoff weeks. Now, I'm shooting for that. It's not like I'm not playing for that, but I'm being realistic that I want to get like a goal for me, obviously, is winning the $1 million. But also like I want to have other chances at getting money. And if they're designing a structure where 30% of the money is in the regular season, like I want a lot of my bullets to have a chance at that as well. So, yeah, I'd say it's like on the margins, like targeting less injured players, targeting less suspended players, I think is how I'm slightly pivoting there, but it's not really changing. Like I'm still correlating for week 17. I still think that matters. If someone like Javonte fell way past ADP, I certainly wouldn't hesitate to draft him, but that's like the slight tweaks I'm making to my strategy.
All right. We'll finish off here with question 7. Best ball dynasty. We've got a, it's dynasty week here on Player Profiler. I'm in one best ball dynasty league. I joined it as an orphan, so I took it over. It was an absolute trash team, Sam. It's just garbage, just absolute trash. But for those who are into dynasty or into best ball, what is going to differentiate our strategies here as we're like, I know that there are best ball dynasty leagues on Sleeper, but there are also some things happening that are going to be coming out very soon that will be in the best ball dynasty realm. So this is something that's been ramping up more lately. How are we going to approach best ball dynasty leagues moving forward?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think best ball dynasty is a ton of fun. I like it because I am not a good dynasty manager. I know that about myself. Making sit start decisions across a bunch of leagues gets overwhelming for me. So I love the dynasty stuff. I love thinking about, you know, future player value and all that strategy and game theory that goes into it. But I don't want to have to manage my team. So I love the best ball dynasty stuff. I think differently than my typical dynasty leagues, I think that in my typical dynasty league where I have to make a decision of who I'm starting at tight end, or even this could maybe be slightly applied to wide receiver, I think the value of just locking in Travis Kelce into your tight end spot every week is so valuable. You're going to get such a massive edge over the person who has to choose between Cole Kmet and Hunter Henry and Luke Musgrave or whatever. But in best ball, that edge is slightly more in the favor of the volume play at tight end, especially in these leagues where you can get deep benches. If you want to not spend a ton at tight end and just go for a volume strategy of getting, I don't know, it depends on how the roster size, but say you have 30 roster spots, get 6 or 7 of these tight ends and just go for a volume strategy, I think you can compete a little bit more with the Kelce drafter, right? That's one thing I'm thinking about. I think that the tight end strategy is a bit different. And I think you can apply that similar logic to wide receiver where, you know, maybe the Gabe Davis type, maybe that's a good one. You're locking in Gabe Davis to your starting wide receiver slot every week. That's not that great. But in best ball, like getting his spike weeks when he does hit is really valuable. So thinking of like player archetypes like that, like some of these guys that you don't feel comfortable locking into your starting lineup each week, but could really pay off in best ball, might be valued slightly differently as well.
And how strongly are you considering trying to get stacks of teams? So is this something that you want only the good offenses? Are you considering all offenses and just if it hits right for that particular week? Like how important is stacking in these best ball dynasty leagues now?
I think it's still valuable. I think it's not the same because it doesn't have the tournament structure of an underdog best ball, but I still, if I'm making a bet on a team, I want to get the full payoff when I'm right about that bet. And I want to get the full downside if I'm wrong about that bet, because dynasty, you either want to be finishing first or finishing last. So I bet on the Cardinals last year and I take Kyler and Hopkins and Marquise Brown or whatever, like that probably failed, right? But then I'm going to finish like close to last and I can get a high pick. Like I'd rather it all go well or it all fail in kind of a sense. So that's why I still think stacking is valuable. Obviously a little less valuable, like players change teams. You might have to like make some trades to continue the stack in the future. It's certainly a different dynamic, but I still like stacking in dynasty.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. It is a lot of fun jumping in. I'm playing that with a few other player profiler people. This last part, Sam, is going to be analyzing some best ball teams. We've got a rubric, and maybe there are some parts of, and when you're looking at best ball teams, because we see them all the time on our Twitter feeds.
Yep.
I evaluate them usually with these five criteria, and I haven't developed like a weighted system yet, but I've been doing this for about 5-6 weeks now. And these seem to be like the five go-tos. And if you want to add anything, we can certainly do that when we get into it. I also want to say as we grade these, we can be tough because that's how we become better best ball drafters. So as we'll look at the first one, and frankly, this is mine.
Okay.
This is a BBM4 team. that I drafted last night against Billy Muzio and against Mike Shope of the Deep End. And it is a lot of Chargers and Denver. So you see week 17 stacking and correlation. So I think this team is strong with stacking correlation, but you mentioned the overstacking. I wonder if I overstacked, and like the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end structure as well. What are your initial impressions of this one?
Yeah. So going on your rubric, I like the player takes. I think I'm aligned with a lot of, especially the early round stuff, Amon-Ra, Keenan, Eckler, Herbert, Dobbins, and like all those guys are targets. And you get the bonus of like most of them are at ADP or getting ADP value. I like that a lot. Yeah, the overstacking is the most interesting element of this team for sure. I think it's like on the border maybe of overstacking some of these offenses, like probably not for Denver. I think Denver's totally like within range. You're taking Russell Wilson, pick 130. The most expensive player you took was Sutton at pick 85, but then it's all, you know, pretty late round picks. I really like Denver bet, and I don't think so. Other people might say, oh, Russ plus four pass catchers is overstacked. For me, I'm totally fine with that. I think it's viable. The Chargers one is maybe like where you could argue you spent a second round pick on Eckler, third round on Keenan, fifth-ish round on Herbert, or maybe sixth round, right? Like that maybe gets a little pricey. I think maybe in an ideal world, it's hard to do this with like hindsight because you don't know when you're drafting, right? But switching out Eckler for a different running back, I think adds a little bit of weekly ceiling to the team, because I can see a world where, you know, if I don't know, Taylor was available there or something, right? I might that end result a little bit better. But again, you can't know that when you're making that selection of who's going to be available later. Overall, I really like the correlation. I like a lot of the ADP value. My one pushback is maybe the Chargers is like slightly too overstacked, but I don't know, man. I'm coming around more and more to these mega stacks. Like this is something I would do. Like in hindsight, I would say if I could have taken that Eckler pick back, I would. But you don't know that at the time. So what are you gonna do?
And to get him back at the 112 or 201 or what? I intentionally dropped his ADP.
Oh yeah.
If you can get do that. Yeah, I'm an ADP mover, Sam. Come on now. I crowdsourced it. Some people said C, some people said A. I think it'll probably land in like the B range of it. It is a DFS like one game tournament lineup, and chips are all in. And if it's Denver who goes off, then I've got two of the LA Chargers come back around possibly. So we'll see.
If that game goes off, it's hard to see how you, like, unless it's Mike Williams. I guess it could be Mike Williams and Judy, right? But, like, you basically lock yourself into scenarios where if that game goes off, like, you're going to profit. So I like that. You've consolidated the bet. And I think it's also teams that could just be good throughout the whole season. I like it.
All right. And then the other team that we're going to look at is submitted by JaguarPaw34. I actually haven't taken a look at this one yet, but it's Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones, Jacobs, Mixon, Mitchell, Algier, Ty-J Spears, late Lenny, Kupp, Smith, Judy, Pittman, Myers, Rondell Moore, Mims, Samuel, Waller, and Gesicki. There's the Richardson-Pittman stack, and then the Daniel Jones-Darren Waller stack. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I think you got bring backs in both of those with Jacoby Myers in Las Vegas and Josh Jacobs. And then also you got Cooper Kupp to the Giants stack. So seems like this is a guy who was definitely thinking about week 17 from what I can tell. Yeah, I'll start. I like this team. Again, ADP value looks good. He got like a full round on Mixon one point. Yeah, that's really nice. And then mostly no other huge ADP values that stand out, but he's not really reaching for guys.
Reached on Mims, but that's so late that it's not really going to move too much.
Exactly, yeah. And I think Mims will probably be a riser, so I think that one will look okay in a couple weeks. But yeah, good stacking for me. Yeah, the player take stuff I like. I think he got upside at all the positions. I think it's a good roster construction. I think going 2-6-8-2 is correct here from how he built early. I think that's a good construction. Correlation looks good. I'm probably, if I'm this guy, my feedback is I'm tacking on some of these Giants wide receivers late in this build.
Yep.
I'm probably like the Curtis Samuel pick. I'm probably making that Darius Slayton or Hodgins or pick your Giants wide receiver. I just probably want to lever up that bet a little bit with some Giants pass catchers. But
yeah, Jalen Hyatt could fit well with this.
Yeah.
I like your Darius Slayton call as well. That's someone that I like taking late because of his A-dot and touchdown possibility. So I agree with you. That's something that I've noticed some people are doing is drafting a lot of Daniel Jones naked. And I don't know how we can like get the drum beat up for just take some late Giants basket. I don't give a dang if it's Jameson Crowder, even just give Sterling Shepard. I don't care. Like Paris Campbell, pick whoever you want. Yeah. Just go.
I feel the same way. I had a Giants team that I posted on Twitter, and it was like similar to your Chargers Denver thing. It was probably pushing like the limit of overstacked. Like I had Waller plus three Giants wide receivers. But I feel like what people don't factor in is, guys, I'm using like 15th through 18th round picks on these wide receivers. These guys are all terrible bets. Like you can tell me, oh, Daniel Jones isn't going to pass a bunch this year. He gets his points through rushing, blah, blah, blah. If I'm spending 15th through 18th round picks on these guys, like if I had – who was the wide receiver core that finished the year last year? Hodgins, Richie James, and Slayton. Like those guys were putting up points. Like if I had those three in weeks in rounds 15 through 18, like I would have liked that going into the playoffs last year. Yeah. Pick like if it's that cheap, I don't think there's much downside in correlating with Daniel Jones.
And I like your call of Richie James. Now he's on Kansas City. Super, super late. Like round 18 or whatever it is. I think that's an interesting player that could, maybe it's at the end of the season or whatever it is, take a role. So take your shots is what we're saying. If just to increase just a little bit, a sprinkling of more stacking or more correlation or a comeback around, maybe there's a Vegas Raider wide receiver that Trey Tucker, if you're a Trey Tucker truther, Hunter Renfro is going pretty late. Just find some way that it correlates or stacks, I think is our recommendation here.
Yeah. I'm still giving this team like an A minus or an A or something though, because he's still got his stacks. He got his bring backs. I think the construction's really good. I'm not this would be a team I'm happy with. So I'll put that as the final bow on it. Just a little more correlation. But besides that, I love the team.
All right, Sam, it has been, you've been so generous with your time this afternoon, this tonight. I appreciate you jumping on. Make sure y'all are following Sam on Twitter at Sherman_FFB. Sam, give us the plugs for where people can find what you do and all the goodness.
Yeah, for sure. Follow me, like you mentioned, at Sherman_FFB. And then I will be on the Ship Chasing YouTube throughout the summer. Every Monday at 12 p.m., we'll do ADP chasing where we're going over all the biggest risers and fallers and even more crazy, nerdy fantasy football stuff with best balls. Yeah, I'd highly recommend checking that out. It's with Pat Green and Davis Matic. We also will have guests throughout the summer as well. So that's been a ton of fun. But yeah, besides that, nothing else to plug. Bradley, thanks so much for having me on. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah, this was great.
And yeah.
We will we'll have to make arrangements for the future for having a recurring guest, Sam Sherman, everyone. On behalf of Sam, I'm Bradley. Until next time, good luck in the best ball streets, everybody.
Hey, I want to take a moment to thank you for tuning in. It's important to me that all of our media be free. This is only possible because of you allowing a true independent sports media enterprise to thrive unlike any other in the business. So please subscribe to the All-In Package to continue to make all of this possible, to ensure that all of our stats, information, data, content is available to you, especially you, the people that get the site and get the show.